The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana. The news presented by Abraham Donko
and Rosemary Gazy.
In the headlines, President Mahama expresses displeasure about isolation of Ebola-affected countries. GJA and Media Foundation for West Africa welcome apology by Jan Brothers. Demand for hospital ID cards and payment have been cited as barriers to medical emergencies and trauma. Reported cases of cholera decline in Accra Metropolis. Leader of Boko Haram Abubakar Shekau killed as several hundred militants surrender to military. And two women charged in Chicago for raping a man at gunpoint. At first, the summary with Rosemary Gazy.
ECOWAS Chair President Mahama has expressed disapproval over the isolation of countries hit by the Ebola disease in the sub-region. Addressing African heads of state and government at the New York Stock Exchange, he noted that the initial closing of borders and flight bans have soared the challenge in arresting the situation in affected countries. The Ghana Journalist Association, GJA, and Media Foundation for West Africa have welcomed the apology of the Jan Brothers, saying the act is an admission of the fact that they erred in assaulting Daniel Kinu, the Ashanti regional editor of the Daily Graphic. The president of the GJA, Asil Money, however, proposed a compensation package for Mr. Kinu. Mr. Money was nonetheless disappointed at the withdrawal of the case from court by the victim. There seemed to be some improvement in the country's fight against cholera, especially within Greater Accra. Ghana Health Service statistics indicate a decline in reported cases of cholera in the metropolis. The Regional Deputy Director, Public Health, Dr. John Benson Eliza, however, notes that collaborative effort from key stakeholders is necessary to eradicate the disease entirely. And a man posing as leader of Boko Haram, Abubakar Shekau, has been killed by the Nigerian military. The Islamic group has suffered heavy losses in recent weeks as the military battled the group close to its hometown of Maiduguri in the northeast.
Radio Ghana, meeting the news challenge with credible information.
The news now in detail. The chairman of ECOWAS, President John Mahama, has expressed displeasure about the ostracization of Ebola-affected countries in West Africa. He said stigmatization of people affected by the disease is likely to undermine efforts being made by their countries to curb the pandemic. President Mahama was speaking at a working lunch of the African heads of state and government at the New York Stock Exchange. The ECOWAS chair said the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is going to be worse than in East and Central Africa because it is a more mobile region. He said the initial panic reaction of closing borders and stopping flights have made the situation more difficult.
I visited the three Ebola countries recently as a visit of solidarity to try to break the ostracization that they have been subjected to as a result of the disease. This is the first time there's been an outbreak of Ebola in West Africa, and it actually caught everybody by surprise. Our people don't understand the disease. They don't really know how to react to it. And so the initial reaction has been one of panic, one of misunderstanding. But during my recent visit, I realize that people are coming to terms with their ability to understand how the disease is spread, and with knowledge and awareness comes power. And so the people are getting empowered to be able to protect themselves. We need to all respond and ensure that we get this back under control. The peculiar thing about Ebola in West Africa, it's happened in East and Central Africa, and it's always been very quickly contained. There have been several outbreaks in East and Central Africa that have been very quickly, been quickly contained. And so the whole world start watching, thinking that, oh, well, I'm sure this thing will be contained in a relatively short period. So
President Mahama affirmed his decision to accept the request of the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to use Ghana as a staging post for humanitarian assistance to the affected countries.
Ghana is willing to offer every assistance to the United Nations to be able to make this mission a success. My anticipation is that if all of us put our shoulders to it, I mean, within a 6 to 9 months period, we should be able to turn this outbreak around and send it back to where it came from. And so with those words, I guess.
President Mahama speaking at a working lunch of the African Heads of State and Government at the New York Stock Exchange.
Statistics from the Ghana Health Service indicate that the rate of reported cholera cases is declining in the metropolis. Out of 2,386 cases reported at the end of August, the number is now down to 1,425 as of last week. The Deputy Director, Public Health, Greater Accra Region, Dr. John Benson Eliza, said even though the rate of cholera infection is on the decline, key stakeholders must work together to effectively eradicate the disease in Ghana. He also urged the public to report early to the hospital whenever symptoms of cholera occur to prevent needless deaths. A report by Nanama Omari.
Cholera, an acute intestinal infection caused by contaminated food and water, kills within hours if left untreated. Untreated water, food vendors and floods which contaminate domestic water sources are a major factor for the spread of cholera. Up to 80% of cases are successfully treated with oral rehydration salt if reported at an early stage. It is also important that citizens practice personal hygiene and stop the indiscriminate disposal of waste. According to the Deputy Director, Public Health, Greater Accra, Dr. John Benson Eliza, the provision of safe water and sanitation is critical in reducing the impact of cholera.
We don't want anybody to actually get cholera in 21st century. Once it's already happening, let's take measures to control it. We have told the public that because we have cholera outbreak everywhere now, make sure the water you are drinking, you know the source. Hand washing should be like prayers. Once you get the disease, run as fast as possible to the nearest hospital for treatment because cholera is treatable. If you are almost gone, almost dead, no fluid in you before you arrive, there's very little the doctors can do. Reporting early will save a lot of lives. The people providing water and managing our waste also have a key role to play.
The disease control officer, Ghana Health Service, Greater Accra, Atu Eshon, gives an overview of the cholera situation in the region.
From our sciences, we detected that when you take 1,000 people, 3 people will get cholera. From the beginning of the year to June, we had only 28 cases and there wasn't any death. And we've seen that we alone cannot handle. We need a multidisciplinary approach to fight against this. Water sector will have to come in. Local government will have to come in.
He emphasized that all health facilities are fully equipped to continue treating cholera cases.
Nana Momari reporting.
The 7th biennial conference of the College of Health has opened in Accra with focus on Ghana's preparedness to handle medical emergencies and trauma. The 3-day conference is being attended by all units of the health sciences. The conference will discuss issues bordering on how healthcare providers must handle and receive emergency cases. Radio Ghana's Gloria Anderson, who was at the conference, reports that the consensus of participants indicates that demand for hospital cards and money before emergency cases are attended to is dangerous and must be reviewed.
Speaker after speaker emphasized the importance of the theme for the conference following the country's struggle to manage the cholera outbreak and prevent the entry of the Ebola disease. In their assessment, the outbreak of cholera in Ghana and Ebola in some West African countries are medical emergencies and a test of Africa's preparedness to any form of emergencies. The country manager of AstraZeneca Pharmaceutical, William Ofori, speaking to the topic, identified, among others, the lack of education and how to handle emergencies on the part of the public and health providers.
We are facing this cholera epidemic because most of the people are not going to the right facilities on time, and it's all lack of education. We have people with burns, and they think that they should apply everything from palm oil to Vaseline to burn. And these are educated people. Nobody knows what to do in case of an asthma attack, a heart attack. In some countries, standards have been set, and the standards are set around the adequacy of personnel, the training they receive, the facilities at the emergency centers, who the team comprises of, what the ambulance can do even before you get to the hospital. Number one is how quickly does the ambulance respond? And number two, when the patient gets to the healthcare facility, how long does it take to be attended to? The problem is how can we bridge the gap and make sure that there's some level of standard practice, be it private institution, public institution, or center of excellence. So are facilities designed to receive emergencies and respond in real time? Do we get all the other things?
Little Fury provides some suggestions that can help Ghana.
But in all this, we need government support as well. And serious support from government, not only central government, but also the district and the localities and the community. We need to have one center of excellence in every part of the country to handle. We are in a world saddled with all kinds of medical emergencies and trauma of unprecedented proportion. Is Ghana ready to be at the forefront of medical science in terms of handling medical emergencies and trauma? Lucky so far with Ebola, although we are struggling with cholera. And the sad thing is that the corporate world look on unconcerned. And yet, the very people in the corporate world forget that one day they will be patients and they will have to be attended to as a medical emergency.
The Vice Chancellor of the University of Ghana, Professor Ernest Aite, questioned Ghana's preparedness for emergencies, pointing out that the country is still combating the menace of road accidents and has difficulty in handling perennial floods in Accra. He charged the participants to ensure that research presentations made at the conference is put to good use to improve healthcare delivery. The conference will, among other things, discuss road accidents and their effects on pregnant women.
Gloria Anderson's report. The Ministry of Food and Agriculture says Ghana still faces the problem of malnutrition despite some successes chalked up in the sector. Malnutrition is said to be on the increase in the three regions of the north. The Ministry of Food and Agriculture, in a speech read for him, emphasized the importance of food security to the solution of the problem of malnutrition. His sentiments were expressed at the opening of a two-day workshop in Accra to draw up strategies to deal with malnutrition. Samuel Bano and Emilia Aite have the details.
Eating a well-balanced diet is essential for the promotion of good health. As a result, key stakeholders in the agricultural sector are deliberating on how agriculture can contribute to solving malnutrition in Ghana. The Minister of Food and Agriculture, Fifi Kwete, lauded the initiative, saying there is the need to collaborate to fight malnutrition. He called for intensive education to ensure the consumption of wholesome food.
Production ends in consumption, and we should intensify our efforts on education, especially on choices to produce and consume. As we talk of good nutrition, we should also be mindful of the safety aspects of our nutrition. We need to eliminate hunger and malnutrition by all means. And so let us all get on board to ensure good nourishment for the next generation. It is heartwarming to note that now we have mainstream nutrition and agriculture as such. The Ministry of Food and Agriculture and its departments and agencies are leading the way to also as to coordinate the formulation and development of national nutrition policy, which will eventually improve the nutrition in the country.
The Director of Women in Agricultural Development Directorate, WIAD, Dr. Mary Opoku Isiama, said malnutrition has negative social and economic consequences.
Samuel Bano and Emilia Ite filed that report.
After being silent since issues surrounding them broke out, the John brothers have finally spoken. At a news conference in Accra, the brothers, led by their counsel, addressed the media on two issues that have been a subject of debate in the media and the nation at large. These are the disappearance of hip-life musician Castro and the lady companion Janet Bandu, as well as the assault of a Daily Graphic regional correspondent Daniel Kenu. For the details, here's Abraham Donko.
Contrary to early indications of a boycott, the venue for the news conference was filled to capacity as media personnel and equipment competed for every available space. The lawyer for the Jans, KC Jabing, who addressed the media and responded to all issues raised, first touched on the circumstances that led to the disappearance of musician Theophilus Tego, also known as Castro, and a lady companion Janet Bandu. He said up till now, the families have not given up on the search for the two and are yet to recover from the shock.
July 24th, part of the group, including Asamoajan and Castro, took boat rides to Aqua Safari Resort to rent jet skis because this holiday resort did not have jet skis. The skis were rented by the individual members from the management of Aqua Safari Resort, and each person who rented a jet ski was made to sign a generic form that purports to indemnify Aqua Safari Resort against unhappy events that may ensue. All the riders, including Castro, at this point, were provided with and indeed they wore contraptions intended as life jackets. Castro wore a bright reddish color, the same contraption. Castro Road for the last time from Aqua Safari Resort, Peace Holiday Resort, where Bafojan and a few others, including Albert Atete, Anekuya Isi, and Janet Bandu were waiting for their turn. When Castro got to Peace Holiday Resort, Janet Bandu requested to ride on the jet ski with him, and he obliged her. While she was climbing on board Castro's jet ski, Bafojan noticed that she was not wearing a life jacket. He immediately shot up to his feet and remonstrated with Castro to ensure that Janet wore a life jacket before setting off. Castro ignored him and sped off as soon as Janet sat behind him and headed directly toward the estuary.
Mr. Jabing rendered an apology to the Ashanti Regional Editor of the Daily Graphic, Daniel Kanu, who he said was assaulted by some fans who were around when Bafojan and his friend engaged him in a heated argument in Kumasi. He said the Jan brothers have ridden on the back of the media to this stage and wish to maintain that cordiality.
We regret the presence of Bafojan at the location where Daniel Kanu was wrapped up. He was still fuming over Daniel Kanu's question posed to his brother earlier, and he confronted him angrily. That is a fact. A few unhappy words were spoken in the heat of the situation. We regret this incident especially because it created an avenue for some young men who were present to wrap up the journalist. Bafojan ought to have known that some of these young men are prone to fighting causes for football stars, and his angry outburst at Daniel Kanu may unintentionally send a signal to them to get physical. We apologize for Bafojan's angry outburst at Daniel Kanu. It was uncalled for, and we believe it will not be repeated. We condemn Daniel Kanu's roughing up, and we condemn any physical attack on journalists. Aside their own giving football gifts, the Jan brothers are who they are because of the media. We humbly call for a truce between the Jan brothers on the one hand, and the media on the other hand.
Although Asamoa was not at the media briefing in person, his senior brother Bafo was there in the company of some acquaintances.
Abraham Donko reporting.
Meanwhile, the GGA is welcome to the apology of the Jan brothers for the assault on the Daily Graphic Ashanti Regional correspondent Daniel Kanu. GGA's president, Afeomoni, said the apology is an admission by the Jan brothers that they erred in attacking Daniel Kanu. He, however, suggested a compensation package for the graphic reporter. Speaking to Radio Ghana, Mr. Money expressed disappointment with Mr. Kenu's withdrawal of the case from court, saying the case was a fine opportunity for the GGA to show that it can bite.
The Jan brothers have realized that they had molesting Danny Kenu, the Daily Graphic editor for Ashanti, and our huge interest in the case was still predicated on the principle that an attack against one journalist is an attack against all journalists. And the case against the Jan brothers, or the case involving Danny Kanu, is one issue whose tentacles extend far beyond Danny Kanu, Daily Graphic, and even the entire media fraternity. It's a whole national issue, because an assault of any kind, of any magnitude, should be frowned upon and condemned and even punished accordingly. We have accepted the apology, but we believe that there are some lingering issues which ought to be settled. That is a compensation package for Danny Kanu. Even though Danny Kanu has come out to distance himself from any package, from any compensation, he says, you know, that he was no more interested in the case. But I believe that it's one criminal case which must be settled on all fronts, and one key front which settled is that of compensation. Because he actually had a brush with death. He took the arm of God, the saving grace of God, to spare his life. So we believe the Jan brothers and the lawyer can go the extra mile to come up with a package which will reflect, which will match the magnitude of the offense.
As president of GGA, you sound disappointed that Daniel Kanu withdrew the case from court.
Certainly yes, because we had banked on the case, on this case. We saw it as a one winnable case with which we were going to send signals strong, loud and clear to the perpetrators of atrocities and monstrosities against journalists, people who take their own to their hands, people who want to pour their venom or their frustration on journalists who did it. Is just to ask questions or to do their reporterial work within the confines of the law. We've been accused time and time again of only issuing statements or backing without backing. For once, we thought we had the finest opportunity not only to back, but also to bite as well. But we proposed, but Danny Kanu disposed. We are still living with shock, and we try to reconcile ourselves to the reality that Danny Kanu has let our friends down.
The Media Foundation for West Africa also welcomed the apology. Sule Brahma is the executive secretary.
Given the opportunity today, I expected that the right thing to do was for them to apologize, which they did. And I think that under the circumstance, that was the right thing they should have done. And I'm happy that they did that. These things happen. And of course, the reaction and the condemnation from the media have been so robust. And even not people in the media, but ordinary people on the streets have all condemned that development. In as much as many of us would have wished that the case had continued to an end, I think that at least we have some evidence to suggest that people would not tolerate such behavior, particularly when it is directed against journalists.
Beyond the apologies, especially on the side of Daniel Kenny, some have called for compensation for him. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think at this stage, when many people are giving different angles to the story. I've heard lawyers who say that, well, because it's a criminal case, the victim has some limitations in terms of whether or not he can totally withdraw the case from court. I don't know what the developments on that would be. But assuming that it is the case that, yes, the victim has that ultimate right to withdraw the case in its entirety, then...
Executive Secretary of the Media Foundation for West Africa, Sule Brema. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, the major stories. President Mahama expresses displeasure about isolation of Ebola-affected countries. GGA, a Media Foundation for West Africa, welcome apology by John Brothers. Demand for hospital ID cards and payment have been cited as barriers to medical emergencies and trauma. Reported cases of cholera decline in Accra metropolis. Leader of Boko Haram, Abubakar Shekau, killed as several hundred militants surrendered to military, and two women charged in Chicago for raping a man at gunpoint.
Radio Ghana, meeting the news challenge with credible information.
Welcome back. Funding is a major challenge regarding climate change over the years. To this end, stakeholders and civil society organizations have met in Accra to brainstorm on how to develop strategies to access funding. The Deputy Director in charge of Climate Change and Sustainable Development at the Ministry of Environment, Science, Technology and Innovation, Peter Derry, says Ghana cannot afford to lose the opportunity of accessing the fund if the fight against climate change is to be won. Rosemary Ganyaglo reports.
The meeting offered participants the opportunity to come up with a national climate fund and how to accelerate the implementation of the National Climate Change Policy Strategy. The Deputy Director in charge of Climate Change and Sustainable Development, Peter Derry, explained that Ghana needs a strategic plan of international standards to attract donor partners.
We have created structures and avenues through which they can commit those resources. And one of them is what we call the Green Climate Fund, which is the GCF. We have to position ourselves in such a way that when monies are put into this fund and countries are asked to access it, we can also benefit. Because before you can access it, there will be a criteria, and you will have to meet the criteria. You will have to present proposals, and those proposals must be presented within a certain format and must meet certain standards. Because we have lost previous opportunities, we have taken incremental steps to make sure that future ones, we don't lose them. Future is actually bright and we will see light at the end of the tunnel.
The Minister of Environment, Science, Technology and Innovation, Akwesi Opon-Fosu, in a speech read for him said, government is committed to tackling climate change and called on all to come on board.
Over the years, Ghana, like most African countries, has generally failed to attract the needed investment. Much as this situation may be attributed to many factors, the absence of a coordinated policy strategy, both at the governmental and agency levels, account for this failure. It is for this reason that the ministry decided to develop the National Climate Change Policy Strategy, which will serve as a master plan for climate interventions for the short term to the medium term. The success of national efforts at promoting it depends on the combined effort of government, the private sector, and our development partners.
He said resources must be mobilized to finance climate-related activities. This will aid in achieving the aspirations of the National Climate Change Policy Document.
Rosalind Ganyaglo reporting.
Yesterday was the 21st sitting of the Commission of Inquiry into Ghana's poor show at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. The hearing was in camera after the Commission received a letter from Parliament. The Parliamentary Select Committee on Sports was to give evidence to the Commission on how the country prepared and performed at the World Cup, but the chairman of the commission, Justice Senior Jamatha told the public and the media about a letter received from Parliament indicating that the Parliamentary Select Committee on Sports will give evidence in camera. The Commission observed a minute's silence for former Sports Minister Kojo Baredu, who died exactly 6 years ago. It went on to swear in the chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Sports, Kobna Wiyume, before the chairman of the commission called for the closed-door meeting. The PR of the commission, Kamas Bwachi, explains why hearing was in camera.
Post the meeting, the Parliamentary Select Committee on Sports, Youth and Culture. But before this meeting, we had a letter from the Clerk of Parliament who said they would like their members to appear before the Commission in camera. We asked them to come first so that we decide on the modalities of this meeting. They came and we had to arrive on the middle line. So we brought them to the public hearing and won them in. Two people represented all the seven members who appeared before the commission, and the rest is what we are witnessing now, meeting them in camera. It's been almost about 2 hours of an in camera session with them, and I don't know how that one is going to track, how long it's going to track, but then we are waiting to see what happens. If we finish the meeting and we believe we should bring them back to the public sitting, we'll do that. If not, then that will be the end of the sitting.
Okay, great. But what is keeping the commission and the Parliamentary Select Committee in camera for some time now? Is it because we have some delicate issues or it's about protocol?
Definitely, there are a lot that they need to brief the commission on. They are the legislators. They make the laws and everything. And a lot of information passed through them before Brazil, after Brazil. They know a lot. Some of the laws they've been passing and all that. So the commission is interested in knowing what they have, what they can help us with, their recommendations and everything. That's the reason why they are keeping that law.
That was the PR of the Commission of Enquiry into Brazil 2014, Kamas Bwachi, talking to Prince Peace Isuman.
In foreign news, the Nigerian military says more than 260 Boko Haram militants have surrendered in northeastern Nigeria. The military spokesman said the military have killed the man posing as the group's leader, Abubakar Shikau. Boko Haram has suffered heavy losses in recent weeks as the Nigerian military battled the group close to its hometown of Maiduguri in the northeast. The military said 135 Boko Haram members surrendered with their weapons in Biu, Borno State, yesterday, and said further 133 others surrendered elsewhere in northeastern Nigeria and are currently being interrogated. Speaking at the United Nations Security Council meeting, Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan urged the council to find more ways to combat the militants' threat.
The involvement of foreign fighters has remained a common feature of terrorist groups, whether Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, Boko Haram in Nigeria, or the newly emerging Islamic State. The new dimensions introduced by Islamic State to conquer territory and establish its destructive ideology is a major challenge that must be collectively halted before it becomes the norm. This refocuses attention on the need to review present tools for United Nations peacekeeping operations. The violent and criminal activities of Boko Haram have continued to pose a potent challenge to the government and people of Nigeria through a wave of terror, assassinations, bombings, and now abductions and kidnappings predominantly in the northeast of the country. Boko Haram is attempting to truncate development by murder and maim in these areas. In April, our innocent daughters were abducted from a secondary school in Chibok, northeast Nigeria. This callous and criminal act has attracted empathy from Nigeria across the globe. Although it has taken over 3 months since they were abducted, we have never relented in our effort to set them safely free. Together with our partners, we are working assiduously to free our daughters and reunite them with their families.
You heard Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan addressing the UN Security Council.
Two ladies have been charged for raping a man at gunpoint in Chicago, USA. Sierra Ross, 25, a mother of two, was arrested and charged with raping a man. According to CPS Chicago, Ross and a friend were driving in the north side of Chicago when they saw a man walking down the street. Miss Ross stopped and asked the 33-year-old man if he wanted a ride. The man accepted the offer, but Ross's true intention became evident when she pulled a gun on the man. She forced the man to go to the back seat and told him to have sex with her friend. The man pleaded for the woman to stop after they had made him fondle the woman's breasts and back. Ross then ordered the man to take his clothes off, and her friend began to assault him sexually. The women also took $200 and credit cards from the man. The male victim was able to escape when he saw a taxi cab and ran from the car naked. The cab driver allowed the man to use his cell phone to take a picture of Ross's license plate. Chicago police later arrested Ross, and the victim identified her as the assailant. Ross had been arrested for prostitution in the past, but she recently held a position at a pub as a waitress. She was charged with rape and armed robbery and held on a $75,000 bond. A friend is yet to be charged.
Now to end the news, the main points again. The chairman of ECOWAS, President Dramani Mahama, has expressed displeasure about the isolation of Ebola affected countries in West Africa. Mr. Mahama was speaking at a meeting of Africa heads of state and government at the New York Stock Exchange, and the Ghana Journalist Association has welcomed the apology of the John Brothers for the assault on the Daily Graphic correspondent Daniel Kenu. GJA's President Athol Money said the apology is an admission by the John Brothers that they erred in attacking Daniel Kenu. The news was presented by